Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. You're speaking to us from South Florida today?
South Florida, indeed. You wouldn't know it if you lived here because the weather's been more like North Dakota. But it is South Florida.
Right. I'm sure you're a lot warmer than even Vancouver now is minus 14 Celsius, 7 degrees Fahrenheit, which for Vancouver is brutally cold.
Yeah, I've been seeing little pieces of the weather map. It looks like a lot of certainly the Western Hemisphere is exposed there, or the Northern Hemisphere.
Right. Now, of course, my relatives live in Edmonton, Alberta, where it's minus 40. Which it doesn't matter if it's Celsius or, as they say, effing 40. It's the same.
Isn't that where your the fluid on your eyeballs is supposed to freeze?
Well, it sure can. Yeah, and after that temperature, it's like being in outer space. The bottom, your tires freeze, so they go thump to thump. When you drive, you have to have a block heater, so your engine coolant doesn't freeze up overnight. It's a whole different thing, and for newcomers to Canada who've never experienced winter before, believe me, it's an eye-opener. And they actually give lessons to people who are new to Canada. Look, that little thin coat that you bought at Walmart in Missouri, that's not going to work. You need to get the biggest, ugliest parka you can find, and ugly is a big part of it, I think. Ugly is the part that keeps you warm.
Well, that's it's crazy that people live there even. It's a place where even Werner Herzog wouldn't go to do a documentary on all the crazy people living there.
Yeah, well, Alberta too. Today we just received word. Alberta's oil production has now surpassed that of China.
Wow. Good for them.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and I think... China was about the fifth largest oil producer in the world and Canada overall third. So Alberta by itself now has surpassed China.
Well, Alberta needs a good PR guy. You never hear that story. I mean, down here in Florida, who knew?
And, of course, we have a prime minister who hates oil and gas, so that doesn't help Alberta. And that's why, you know, there's separatist murmurings there, just like Texas. Something like 38% of Texans think they should be their own country like they used to be.
And Pennsylvania, for that matter, you know, they've got oil reserves that go back to the days when companies like Pennzoil and Kendall, the rest of them were in there producing a very high grade of oil. And we haven't had anybody in Pennsylvania and New York, for that matter, that wanted to continue to exploit that resource.
So, anyway, I guess temporary good news there. We still don't have a major pipeline out to the West Coast. They're still building that. And Quebec refuses to let major pipelines through so we can export oil and gas to Europe, who would really like to get off reliance on Russian product.
I think Europe seems to want to go the other way on that. Let's get in as deep as we can, and let's get rid of NATO, and we can do business with the Russians. And the funny thing is, they may be right.
Well, if people just cooperated and stopped negotiating with bombs, imagine how nice the world would be. How many brilliant people have been killed in all the wars? And how many cures for disease would have been developed if those young people, especially, had been allowed to live?
Yeah. My what if is what if half the business on the internet were not criminal? You know, just go to the epicenter there at Craigslist or something, and you realize that no better vehicle has been devised for committing petty crime than the internet, and of course sometimes more than petty crime. So if everybody on the internet were doing honest business, this would be a very, very different world.
Now, about the business on Wall Street, how do you read the markets so far this year?
They're doing everything they can to confound the popular wisdom. You know, we have it that January is kind of a bellwether for the rest of the year, and January started out with the market falling on its face. I certainly bought into that with the Sunday commentary I put out last week, and I expected everything to go lower, but it didn't. It went higher enough this week so that as of today, Friday, to end the week and go into a three-day weekend, the usual sleazeballs that make things go up and down said, that's all, you know, let's take her down today. So you could see the problem developing because the usual high flyers were not exactly flying today.
The Bitcoin ETF, is that good news for cryptocurrencies, or is this, again, a lot of hype over nothing?
Well, you know it's good news because Bitcoin is dropping like a stone today. It's and it's classic buy the rumor, sell the news. The market's been waiting on a decision to enact. So here it is, and Bitcoin is getting sacked today. And I think it's just a test run for what's going to happen to the stock market when the thing everybody's been hoping for years now, a pivot toward easing, happens. When the Fed actually brings rates down by 25 basis points, you can absolutely bet that will begin this market's collapse.
Yeah. Now, why would that be?
Well, again, it's a huge buy the rumor, sell the news. The market has been so obsessed with when is this Fed pivot happening, and when it wasn't happening, and Powell kind of said it wasn't going to happen, and then he said, well, it will, and then he said it won't. So the market doesn't mind being confused because all the gyrations are really helping to enrich the sleazeballs who manipulate it, and they've done an excellent job. Everything sort of plays off Fed news. But again, that's going to be classic buy the rumor, sell the news when interest rates actually come down by 25 basis points.
Now, is that because people think cheaper money will mean more money in the markets, but it actually doesn't? Because if you were making money in a savings account and so on, you're making less money, so you're less likely to invest it elsewhere.
That's what you just said. It came through. The convolutions of it are really what's on the market's minds. All the quote-unquote thinking is so convoluted. It's, reminds me of the Lenny Bruce routine, Father Flotsky, where he's saying, you know, Dutch, there's an old saying, once a boy goes the bad road, the good road becomes hard to follow. And when the good road becomes hard to follow, the bad road opens and the good road closes. So anyway, that's how the market thinks. And I use that word thinks in quotes. And that's why I'm a technician. I let the charts do all the explaining for me, lest I should make the mistake of thinking about it.
That's like Yogi Berra's. That place is so popular, no one goes there anymore.
Yeah, I've seen that. You know, that's really... I guess in the pantheon of Yogi Berra isms, and some of the ones, I think that was a real one. He actually did say that. Yeah. And when you're on the books for something like that, all of the other things that sound like Yogi Berra isms are attributed to Yogi. So I think 1,000 years from now, he'll still be remembered.
So what's your overall take now that, Are we putting money into a market that's going to collapse shortly, or it still has lots of room to grow?
Shortly. I've been dealing with shortly myself since the 1980s. Any time now. Valuations on any metric you can use, this market is way overbought. I don't doubt that there are people on Wall Street who could list 12 bullet points about why it's going a lot higher. But, of course, you have to take their forecasts with a grain of salt. But, I'm sticking with my own signpost, and that's Microsoft. I've got a 430 target on it, and I have to say the way they brought it down a week ago, it led me to doubt that it was going to get from the time around 370 to 430. But that's the best I can do to kind of figure out where it's all going to end. Microsoft is the most important stock in the world right now. It displaced Apple or superseded Apple simply because Apple is very vulnerable in a recession. Mainly its iPhone sales are going to drop off, as they already have in China. But Microsoft, with its subscription revenues, is close to bulletproof as a company can be. So Microsoft is going to be booking subscription revenues even when this country's the world is in a depression. And that's why you got to like the stock more than any other stock. So it's currently trading 386, and it made a spiky high yesterday, just a little above 390. But I've got a major target on it at 430. And I'm sure enough about it. I know that Microsoft is, if it gets there, it's not going to get past it. It may give you a little nervous jitter up around that price, but it's not going to blow past it without a major correction or a bear market intervening. So, but I'm somewhat less sure that it's actually going to get there. And that's my concern now, that I'll miss the onset of the bear market because I was waiting for Microsoft to get to a level that it never reached. But the stock was strongly resurgent more recently, and I'm thinking, well, maybe it will get to 430. So that's what I put out to your listeners as a good, I think it's as good a way as any to, number one, to stay bullish no matter what you think about the economy and the quote-unquote fundamentals, but also to signal when a top will logically have been reached.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, AI, of course, was the flavor of the year in 2023. Obviously, it'll continue into 24. But is too much attention being paid to it? And is it almost like, if you remember back in the year 2000, Y2K, our computers can't handle the change into a new millennia. We have to spend billions upgrading them and reconfiguring them when actually nothing had to be done. They were going to do it all by themselves. Is AI overblown?
Completely. I think it's a fraud, and you can see Facebook just joined the pack. This is Zuckerberg's new baby. He's a little late getting on the AI bandwagon, but everybody's there. You know, even some guy who bought distressed property in San Francisco. Turns out he did it because he thinks AI development is going to bring San Francisco back. But everywhere you look, it's sort of the buzzword for companies that would like to raise more money. And, you know, you can have AI flavored bubblegum and AI this and AI that. But you have to realize that certain applications of AI that would seem to be fundamental, like spell check, they can't even, you know, spell check is a drooler. I mean, it can't, spell check is the worst iteration of AI that we come in contact with in our daily lives, that and the grocery store checkouts. But the trend now, I've seen a couple of grocery chains in the U.S., maybe, I think it was Kroger's, but somebody is about to pull out all their AI checkouts because it just hasn't worked. So when you see the really basic applications of AI just floundering, you wonder really how it's going to change our lives for the good. And at best, even if it does work, you're overlaying something that is ostensibly, that has some form of intelligence on top of a system that is so mind-numbingly dysfunctional that you know, you can't even get a support call without being on hold for an hour. So that's a problem with AI. Our system is so screwed up, the way pretty much everybody does business, that putting AI on top of it is just going to intensify the confusion and dysfunction.
Well, look at how hard it is to get a hold of somebody when you call a switchboard now. Switchboard hell, we call it. And, you know, if you know the number of the guy, well, if I knew the number, I would have dialed it. Yeah, and remember when you had your sharp receptionist, she would know who was in, who was out, and who was where. That smart switchboard doesn't know that.
Yeah, and you know that one thing that's driving AI, making a lot of CEOs drool, is the possibility to further distance themselves from their customers. You know, very few companies want to talk with their customers today, so they put an AI-powered layer between you and a human and any human, like Vimeo, for instance. Vimeo is a big company, but just trying to get a human being when you've got a problem, and of course, any problem with Google, they'll send you to their quote unquote support groups, but you got a better chance of getting an audience with the Pope or face to face with the Wizard of Oz. So that's another fact that doesn't seem to be finding traction really with the AI believers, and that is that fundamentally AI is a way of putting people out of work. That's the only thing that's driving. And it's if it's automatic, if it's cars that drive themselves, it's the purpose of it is to put truck drivers, you know, to take them out of the driver's seat, to not even have to hire truck drivers. And we're having small AI intrusions now into medicine. Instead of going to see your doctor, you know, you'll talk to some AI diagnostics tool, and it'll give you some BS diagnosis. We're losing sight of the fact that a good doctor is someone you go to see, and he looks at your nails and your skin color and everything else, and he can tell you a lot more than AI is ever going to be able to tell us. But nonetheless, we're letting it happen, and it's being sold as some sort of scientific advancement. What it is a deflationary diminution of a service itself. We're getting less healthcare, and that was always inevitable because healthcare is becoming less and less affordable. So how do you keep it up? Well, you have people talk to an AI diagnostics tool instead of visiting the doctor. And if that is not an example of the standard of living in this country slipping away, I don't know what is.
Yes, and with AI in charge, too, when you say intuitive, a doctor knows that usually, say, you're bubbly or your demeanor means a lot about how healthy you are. How would AI know?
I mean, it can ask you 100 questions to pin things down a little bit, but and it might turn up you know, more cases of tick fever or something like that, something Lyme's disease, something that can be a little mysterious. But, you know, the idea of thinking that AI-based tools can really improve medical science, I count me among the skeptics, really. And when that gets to, you heard it here, maybe not first, But when AI becomes the rationale for, in a surgical room, in an operating room, when the rationale becomes that it compensates for the lower level of skills of the surgeons themselves that the colleges are turning out. You know, the colleges, medical schools now are so focused on affirmative action, and I think they've reached the limit of what people will accept under those laws. You know, should our pilot, do we not need such highly trained pilots or surgeons if we've got AI to help them out? and believe me, we're on a path to we're going to see that play out somehow, and I'm not quite sure where we'll draw the line.
Well, the 737 MAX, a perfect example of when you let AI take over. Two planes plow into the ground because the plane thinks it's stalling when it's not.
Right, and one of the big issue there is, you know, how are we going to fly planes with one pilot, with no co-pilot? And just imagine how much the airlines will save on that. From a technological standpoint, we're there. The planes can fly themselves. But let's hope that the resistance that's there on the part of passengers remains pretty solid.
And of course, Boeing now can't even bolt panels on. There were no bolts on the panel that blew out of that Alaska Airlines plane. And also, Boeing used to have quality control managers who would go and take a look at work after it was done, but they got rid of it, calling it the Maytag model, because Maytag found that when workers knew that someone would check their work, they weren't as diligent in producing a quality product. So the quality of their washing machines went up. But the difference between an airliner and a washing machine is when a washing machine fails, nobody dies.
Except for my Samsung, there was some sort of recall because the spin cycle, I think, had seriously injured some people.
Oh.
You know, a spin cycle run amok.
Oh, my gosh.
Death. Yeah, don't ever buy a Samsung appliance, by the way.
Death by spin cycle.
Yeah. So
sounds
anyway,
like
I
a Twilight Zone.
I got a new washing machine, and so far, I haven't lost any limbs.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim. It was an enjoyable 20 or 30 minutes there, and I appreciate the chance to connect with your vast audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He was speaking to us from South Florida. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.